Welcome to the deep dive. You know the drill. We dig the sources you send us, cut through the clutter, and pull out the stuff that really matters so you get genuinely informed fast.
And today, we're diving into something pretty fundamental about, well, us, our brains. It's neuroplasticity. We're really digging into how our view has shifted, you know, from the old ideas about the brain to what we're learning now.
Yeah, it's a massive shift, isn't it? Because for ages, the dominant idea was basically your brain develops, hits a certain point, and boom, that's it, locked in. Fixed.
Right, set in stone. But the research we're looking at today, it tells a completely different story. Much more dynamic, much more adaptable.
So let's define that term first, neuroplasticity. Based on the sources, what are we actually talking about here?
Okay, so the plasticity part just means easily shaped, right? Moldable. So neuroplasticity is the brain's capacity, neurons, networks, the whole setup to change connections and behavior.
In response to what, though?
Well, anything, really. New information, learning something, sensory input, just development over time, or even dealing with damage or dysfunction. It's about how bits of the brain change to do different things or the same things differently.
And it's not just one single mechanism. It's happening on different levels.
Exactly. Individual neuron connections changing, whole circuits reorganizing. It's complex, which makes that old historical view seem even more, well, dated.
Let's talk about the historical view. The sources mentioned that maybe, what, 40 years ago, the neuroscience consensus was quite different.
Oh, absolutely. Back in, say, the 80s, the general belief was the nervous system got wired up during development. And after a certain age, that was basically it, fixed.
And the implication there is pretty heavy. Like, if you had a stroke or injury after that critical period.
The thinking was, yeah, recovery was impossible or extremely limited. Those pathways were considered gone for good. A very pessimistic outlook, really.
A really limiting model.
Yeah.
So what's the good news from the recent research in our sources?
The good news is that overwhelming evidence now shows that old model was just wrong. The nervous system is not fixed. It keeps changing pretty much throughout our entire lives.
And that's huge because this constant change, this adaptability, it's not just theoretical. It underlies so much of what we do.
Totally. It's how we learn new things, right? Pick up new skills. Every time you learn something, you're physically changing your brain. That's plasticity in action.
And it also gives us resilience, like if there's damage.
That's a key part. The brain can, in some cases, compensate. It can reorganize, maybe form new connections, reroute functions around damaged areas. It's not perfect, but it's possible.
Okay, so that's the big shift. Fixed brain to dynamic, changing brain.
Mm.
But the sources are also careful, right? They add some caveats, some bad news almost.
Yeah, it's important context. Neuroplasticity isn't like a magic wand. It has real limits. It won't fix everything.
Especially with severe damage.
Right. Extensive injury might be too much for these mechanisms to fully overcome. And another point the sources make is about age.
Ah, okay. So it continues throughout life, but maybe it changes.
Generally, yeah. The capacity seems to be more robust when we're younger. You see more dramatic reorganization potential in kids' brains compared to older adults. But, and this is crucial, it does continue. It doesn't just switch off.
So the core message is this fundamental paradigm shift. The adult brain isn't this static, hardwired thing. It's adaptable, capable of learning, capable of recovery, even if there are limits.
Exactly. It's a much more optimistic and frankly accurate picture.
So how does it actually work? How does the brain do this changing? What are the mechanisms the sources talk about?
Right, the nitty-gritty. The sources break it down into several key processes. They happen at structural levels, like physical connections and functional levels, how things work. Though, honestly, the line can get a bit blurry.
Okay, so what's first?
A really fundamental one is called long-term potentiation, LTP.
Right, LTP. I've heard this linked to memory. It's about strengthening connections.
Precisely. If you stimulate a synapse, the connection point between neurons repeatedly, its response gets stronger when you stimulate it later. It becomes more sensitive, more efficient.
Like paving a path by walking it over and over.
That's a great analogy. The sources often use the hippocampus, a key memory area, as an example. Stimulate one pathway repeatedly, pathway one, leave another alone, pathway two. Later, pathway one shows a much bigger response. It's been potentiated.
And this isn't just in the hippocampus.
No, the sources list other areas too. Pathways involved in fear, like auditory input to the amygdala, cortical areas talking to the striatum, even in visual processing pathways. It seems pretty widespread.
Okay, so strengthening connections, is there an opposite?
Yep, long-term depression, or LTD. It's basically the flip side.
So weakening connections.
Exactly. Certain patterns of stimulation can actually make the connection less responsive over time. The potential measured at the receiving neuron gets smaller. The sources show plots of this gradual decrease.
Why would the brain want to weaken connections?
Well, it's probably crucial for forgetting old stuff, refining circuits, making sure the important connections stand out. You can't just keep strengthening everything.
Makes sense. Like clearing out the clutter. What else?
Then there's something called synaptic pruning. The sources call it gardening for the brain, which I quite like.
Gardening, so trimming things back.
Exactly. Removing synapses that aren't being used or aren't efficient. This is huge during development. You get this massive explosion of synapses early on, like until age 2, and then a dramatic drop, a pruning phase, particularly between ages 2 and 10. It slows down but continues through adolescence, especially in areas like the prefrontal cortex involved in higher thinking. It seems to mostly finish by the late 20s.
Wow. So the brain overproduces connections and then cuts back based on experience.
That seems to be the idea. The visual cortex example is classic. A baby's visual cortex might have connections for other senses initially, but as they get visual input, those non-visual synapses get inhibited and pruned, leaving a network tuned for sight.
Okay, so LTPLTD adjusts strength, pruning removes connections. This must relate to synaptic strengthening in general.
Yeah, synaptic strengthening is just the umbrella term for anything that increases the synapse's efficiency, its output, relative to its input. LTP is a key way that happens. LTE decreases strength.
Got it. Any other mechanisms? Especially maybe related to injury.
Yes, denervation supersensitivity. This is interesting. If some neurons that normally send signals to another neuron are lost, the receiving neuron can sometimes compensate by becoming more sensitive to the signals it does still get. It might grow more receptors for the neurotransmitter.
So it tries to make the most of the remaining input?
Kind of, yeah. The skeletal muscle example is given muscle fibers get super sensitive if their nerve is damaged. But again, the sources caution this often doesn't fully make up for major damage.
Okay, and there was one more, something that really challenges the old fixed brain idea.
Yes. Adult neurogenesis. This one was pretty revolutionary. It's the generation of completely new functional neurons.
New neurons. But in adults, I thought that only happened when we were developing.
That was the belief for a very long time. But research, starting with rats' hippocampi and now seen in other animals too, shows it does happen throughout life.
Wow. Not everywhere, though.
No, the sources are clear. It's in restricted areas. It's not like your whole cortex is churning out new cells. But the fact that it happens at all in adults was a huge crack in the old dogma.
So these are the tools the brain uses. Tweaking connections, removing old ones, boosting sensitivity, even adding new parts.
Pretty much. That's the biological toolkit behind this incredible flexibility we call neuroplasticity.
It really does paint a picture of a constantly evolving organ.
Mm.
Let's make this more concrete. The sources give some great real-world examples, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. These really bring it home. The London taxi driver study is probably one of the most famous.
Right. Navigating London without GPS. That's intense spatial memory needed there.
Totally. And researchers looked at their brains, specifically the hippocampus, which is key for spatial memory.
And they found what? Actual physical differences.
Yes. No difference in the overall size of the hippocampus compared to control subjects, but the back part, the posterior hippocampus, was significantly larger in the taxi drivers.
Larger. And the front part?
The anterior part was smaller, suggesting some kind of internal reorganization. But the really key finding was that the size increase in the back correlated with how long they'd been driving.
So more experienced driving gears bigger structural change.
Exactly. And these were adults. Average age 44, driving for over a year and a half. Direct evidence of structural plasticity driven by learning and experience in adulthood.
That's impelling. What about something like learning a language?
Another great example. The sources mention a study showing that learning a second language also leads to structural changes, specifically increased gray matter density in the left inferior parietal cortex.
Gray matter, so more cell bodies, more connections.
That's the implication. And again, there were correlations. Higher proficiency in the language meant greater density. And also, the earlier they learned the language, the higher the density tended to be.
Interesting. So age might play a role in the extent of the change, even if change is still possible later.
Seems like it. Now think about compensation. What happens when the brain loses input, like with visual impairment?
Does it just sit there, unused, the visual part?
Not according to the sources. A review mentioned describes how the visual cortex gets repurposed. It starts processing other things, touch, hearing, even language.
Repurposed. So areas usually doing vision are now doing language comprehension.
In some cases, yes. Or processing semantic information. The idea is maybe those non-visual synapses that get pruned in sighted people, they stick around and develop in visually impaired individuals.
And does it matter when someone loses their sight?
It seems to. The sources note that congenital visual impairment, being blind from birth or very early on, often leads to greater cortical changes, more plasticity in those visual areas, compared to losing sight later in life. Timing matters.
Okay, one more study example, the Braille one. This was with sighted people.
Yeah, sighted adults learning Braille. They tracked their brains using MRI, as they learned, and they found changes.
What kind of changes?
Adaptations in the brain's reading network, an area called the ventral occipitotemporal cortex. It started responding to tactile input from reading Braille. Plus, they saw physical changes in gray matter volume and even myelin, the insulation around nerve fibers and sensory areas.
So both functional changes, how it worked, and structural changes.
Exactly. Showing plasticity is really this multifaceted thing. It's not just one type of change.
These studies are powerful, but the sources also mention some individual case studies that are just mind-blowing.
Right. These really show the extremes of what the brain can do, especially after injury, like Cheryl Schiltz.
She lost her sense of balance, right, from medication damage.
Yeah. Her vestibular system was damaged, but she learned to regain balance using this experimental device, a helmet, with sensors sending signals through a strip on her tongue.
On her tongue? How does that even work?
Her brain basically learned to interpret those electrical pulses on her tongue as balance information. It created a whole new sensory pathway to compensate. Amazing adaptation.
Wow. Huh? Okay. And the young boy who had part of his brain removed.
Yeah, a 6-year-old with severe seizures. They had to remove a large part of his right hemisphere, including areas normally involved in vision, like face and object recognition.
So what happened? Did he lose those abilities?
Incredibly, no. His left hemisphere took over those visual functions, and his overall cognitive function, his IQ, was fine, actually slightly improved after stopping the seizures. It shows the incredible reallocation capacity, especially in a young brain.
And there was one more, Maura Lieb.
Similar story, but maybe even more profound. She had prenatal stroke damage to her left hemisphere, which was removed when she was just 9 months old.
The left hemisphere. Isn't that usually dominant for language and motor control for the right side?
Usually, yes. But her right hemisphere, with rehabilitation, took over those functions, speech, motor skills. It's just profound reorganization.
These cases really drive home how dynamic the brain can be, completely challenging that old fixed idea.
Absolutely. From everyday learning to recovering from massive injury, the evidence for plasticity is just overwhelming.
So with all this potential for change, does it happen equally everywhere in the brain? Or are some areas more plastic than others? The sources seem to suggest it's nuanced.
It is nuanced, and the answer kind of depends on what you mean by plasticity. Are we talking about changing with normal experience or recovering after damage?
Okay, good distinction. Let's start with changing through normal learning and experience.
For that, areas often highlighted as highly plastic include the hippocampus, obviously crucial for learning and memory. Also, the sensory cortices, like the visual cortex adapting to input. The motor cortex learns new movements. And the prefrontal cortex.
Involved in planning, decision-making, social stuff.
Right. That area continues developing and adapting well into adulthood, shaped by complex experiences.
Okay, now what about plasticity in terms of recovering from damage? Are those same areas equally good at bouncing back?
Potentially not always. The sources suggest the hippocampus might have good recovery potential, partly due to that neurogenesis we talked about. The motor cortex can also reorganize significantly with rehab after stroke, for example.
But some areas might be less capable of recovery.
It seems so. Damage to the visual cortex or the prefrontal cortex can sometimes lead to more persistent, significant impairments that are harder to fully compensate for, compared to maybe motor or even some memory issues.
And are there areas generally considered less plastic overall?
The sources mention a few possibilities. Maybe the basal ganglia involved in movement, habits, reward might have less neurogenesis, less turnover. Perhaps the primary auditory cortex is a bit less changeable than, say, the visual cortex. But it's complex, and research is ongoing.
So it's definitely not a simple yes or no for the whole brain. Context is key.
Absolutely. What kind of change? Where in the brain? At what age? In response to what? It all matters.
Okay, so let's wrap this deep dive up. Looking back at the sources, The big picture is this incredible journey from believing the brain was fixed to understanding it as this dynamic, adaptable organ.
Yeah, the old view is just gone. The research overwhelmingly shows the brain changes, structurally and functionally, throughout life. It's shaped by everything we do, everything we experience, and it even has ways to try and compensate when things go wrong.
We saw the mechanisms, LTP strengthening connections, LTD weakening them, pruning, clearing things out, even adding new neurons with neurogenesis.
And those amazing examples, the taxi drivers, the language learners, the people overcoming visual impairment or brain injury, they just make it so real.
It really is a much more powerful and, I guess, hopeful understanding than we had before.
Definitely.
So the final thought for you listening. If your brain has this built-in capacity for change, this lifelong potential to rewire and adapt based on what you do and experience, what does that actually mean for you? What possibilities does that open up for learning new things, tackling challenges, maybe even consciously shaping your own mind at any age?